My name is Allegra Sloman, and as my text today, I want to take the Bible verse Matthew 7:3. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? As an aside, when I read this homily to my mother, which I always do before I deliver it to you folks, I read it to her on the phone, she said, "Which version of the Bible is that? That's not the King James Version." To which my response is, "And why would an atheist care?" There is much of poetry and wisdom in the Bible, and the verse I just read is a good example of it. It is, of course, no literal plank that I wish to bring to your attention. Today I want to talk about cognitive bias, that continuous wellspring of human ability to be unaware of blind spots, erroneous thinking, and logical inconsistencies in oneself while swiftly perceiving them in others. A cognitive bias is a human tendency to draw the wrong conclusion from a set of circumstances based on faulty thinking rather than the facts. The list of cognitive biases is very long. I printed something out that has a long, long list of cognitive biases on them. There's a few left at the back. The list of cognitive biases is very long, and because cognitive bias is a hot topic in contemporary psychology, that list is getting longer every year. Those of you who picked up the handout will see how long it is, although there is some overlap and some biases are yet unstudied. There are three things you need to know about cognitive bias. You have them. So does everybody else. And you can change your life for the better if you work toward understanding cognitive biases in yourself and others. Biases come in all shapes and sizes. They don't have to be ugly, like ageism, racism, and homophobia. They can be pretty much harmless, especially when you know they're there. When I first came to Unitarianism, I went to a church in Montreal where "Enter, Rejoice, and Come In" was the in-gathering music every single Sunday. To this day, I wish Beacon did the same. Why? Well, let's take a look at bias number 51. The mere exposure effect. That is the tendency to express undue liking for things merely because of familiarity with them. Now that I've been coming to Beacon for the best part of a decade, I well remember my resentment when we had to stop lighting candles for joys and concerns when we went to the gathering. Oh, I see a couple of other people laughing. Like, I was filled with a fury of resentment. Honestly, it's just like, why? Why was I so unhappy? Because I was familiar with it. I was familiar with the candles. And then after a year, I was pretty much okay with putting pebbles into a vase of water because I'd been doing it for a year, because I participated in the ritual, and because people I love participated in the ritual. So I just went along for the ride. Even if you, in truth, have no control over anything external to you, the familiar gives you the illusion of control. It is one of the reasons why our hearts buck so hard against change, even good change. This leads to some other biases. Number 85, system justification. Number 80, status quo bias. Don't worry, I'll fill it in. Number 50, loss aversion. And number 26, endowment effect. These are all biases that make clubs, businesses, churches, families, and many other human groups buck very hard against change. But how do they all link together? System justification is the tendency to defend and bolster the status quo. To be a true bias, the tendency to defend and bolster the status quo needs to be set in context. It's only when the bias is expressed in the teeth of the evidence that it's a bias. Otherwise, it's just self-knowledge or a preference. May I also point out that your ability to see yourself as biased varies from day to day and from situation to situation. You can be very open-minded about organizational changes at work, for example, and very close-minded about what Thanksgiving dinner is supposed to look like, to the point of arguing with your mother-in-law about giblet gravy. That's no preference, that's a bias. When the system justification bias is in play, then whatever arrangements you have in the group that currently exists are supported and preferred and funded, and whatever alternatives are suggested are bad-mouthed, under-resourced, and shunted aside. This bias is what allows groups to do things that are clearly and plainly not in their best interest, not in the group interest, not in anybody's interest. This bias gets along well with the status quo bias, the tendency to want things to stay the same, as well as the endowment effect, which points to people wanting to be paid for something they own, like more for something that they own, than they would pay if they had to replace it. So think about it. People want to be paid more for something that they own than they would pay to replace it. I call this the garage sale effect. $5? It's worth... Yeah. Then there's loss aversion, which makes the pain of the loss of something more nasty than the pain of acquiring it. So they all work together. End result? Nobody wants to change anything at church. Actually, there isn't a person in this room that doesn't want to change something about church. We just know that there will be a big challenge involved in making the change happen. My end of the elephant doesn't look like yours. Don't you know? So I started off today, why worry about the speck in your brother's eye when you have a plank in your own? Well, it's human to do that. It may not be wise or good or just, but it is human. Now, it seems to me that most of our cognitive biases seem to have one of two psychological purposes. Biases like the herd instinct are all about the human craving to belong. We don't stick our necks out, and we follow the example of others so that we can be part of a group, and this is important, and feel safer. That's what the herd instinct is about. People club together, people get together in groups because they feel safer. They feel psychologically safer. If you're selling heroin on the streets of Vancouver as a foot soldier in some kind of drug gang, the sacrifices that you make to belong to that group will not avail you once you're arrested or shot in a turf war. But the main reason that young men and women make those sacrifices and take those risks is to belong, to share values, and to participate, especially when nobody else has bothered to take them in. At the same time as we have biases that encourage us to belong, to group together and form a herd, we have biases that allow us, at least in our own minds, to differentiate ourselves from others by allowing us to emphasize in our own minds our uniqueness, intelligence, you know, good fortune, good memory, etc., etc., etc. These biases, in my opinion, are more pernicious than the biases that make you want to belong. I think that they are harder to identify and attack. So let's look at these biases. How about number one, actor-observer bias? This is a sneaky one. It's definitely a plank in the eye. Suppose, for the sake of argument, that you hear that Allegra has been in a car accident. I haven't, but let's just take that as the given. Now, further suppose that you have an opinion about me as being a rather frivolous and inattentive person. This might bias you to believe that my personality had more to do with the accident than the facts surrounding the accident. Now put the shoe on the other foot. You are describing the exact same accident, an accident you had, to a friend. Your personality would have nothing to do with your description of the accident. You would say something like, it was dark, the road was wet, and I had just swerved to avoid a raccoon, and this guy made an illegal lane change. And your friend would say, how awful. But she might secretly be thinking you were too tender-hearted and you should have just clipped the raccoon. See what I mean? The person who's watching gives more credence to the personality of the person rather than the facts, right? So more credence to the personality and motive than to the facts. When the situation is reversed, personality doesn't come into it at all. So see what I mean about this being a really, really tricky bias? Because as soon as you put the shoe on the other foot, you're going, oh, I should be asking what were the circumstances of the accident and not making assumptions about the motivation of the person who was in an accident. How do you fight a bias like that? Well, it's hard. You can tell yourself, I pledge to myself that I will judge situations on facts that I can verify, and I won't give my feelings and preferences the same weight as facts. Well, good luck with that. I mean, if any of you figure out how to do it, let me know. It's a struggle, but it's an important struggle. Hardly anything you do with your mind can affect your life more than to make the decision that you're going to get to know all the little dark corners and unexamined assumptions in your life. So you don't fool yourself as much. And so you don't make unwarranted assumptions about other people. And so you don't make unwarranted assumptions about the thoughts, feelings, and actions of other people. Or maybe you still make unwarranted assumptions, but you can catch yourself doing it. Like the cook who corrects the seasoning prior to serving the dish. I call attention to cognitive bias like a skeptic at a magic show. When you're 8 years old, you might think that the magician really made the elephant disappear and really pulled a rabbit out of that hat. If that 8-year-old is sitting next to a hardened skeptic, the skeptic will say, hey kid, there's a trick. There's a trick to it. Then the 8-year-old, understanding the mechanics of the trap door that's in the table, will turn to the 6-year-old and say, "Ya big baby, there's a trap door in the table." When the 6-year-old says, "Wow," with awestruck wonderment, the 8-year-old has left self-deception behind. She can no longer say to herself that what the magician is doing defies the laws of nature. Shedding bias is a sign of growth, maturity, self-esteem, and wisdom. But there will always be folks in the audience who prefer wishful thinking to facts. Fight self-deception in yourself. Fight the urge to belittle others for lack of knowledge and understanding by holding compassion in your heart. Hold that as a bias, if you will. If someone is genuinely ignorant of their own incompetence, for example, then it is the incompetence that should be addressed, not your own hurt feelings that somebody should have known better. How often do we hold others to a higher standard than we hold ourselves? Nitpicking on a fly speck and ignoring our own big and smelly compost heap, if I may borrow one of Sue Sparlin's favorite metaphors. I linked cognitive bias to congregational life. Each of us is at a different stage of a journey towards competence in spiritual growth and fellowship. To be aware of cognitive bias in yourself and others makes it easier to adapt. Let's face it, change is coming. To find practical and humane methods of resolving conflict, to not take things personally, to be able to apologize meaningfully when we have given offense, and to nurture ourselves as we battle internalized bias and fear of the other. At its best, a UU congregation is a place where you work on your theology along with the rest of your life, sometimes as more of an activist, sometimes as more of a hermit, or more a traveler, or more family-centered, depending on your age and your stage, and depending on how your life has arced smoked and sputtered and sometimes even held a steady flame. But in order to approach the idea of the holy or the powerful or the eternal, we must keep our wits about us. If we're going to think about it, we're better prepared if we know where the pitfalls are. Different religions emphasize different things, but there's also a lot of attention paid to the same things over and over again in different forms, in different religions. Meaningful and honest speech, cleanliness, discipline in the face of trials, charitable behavior, and kindness to and awareness of those in need, diligent support of the faith, and trustworthy behavior in performing tasks. All of these behaviors are worth promoting. I can certainly see supporting any number of behaviors as long as you show me the science or the positive outcomes that recommend why I should, for example, support needle exchanges for IV drug users. My bias leads me to say, when asked to support something, that I don't want the rule or, you know, the Bible or the Quran or the Book of Mormon. I want to be shown the reason, the logic, the power of the argument. I can be convinced but not coerced. I want to hear from the experts because I've only ever got my arms around one leg on that elephant. Nobody knows everything, but together we know quite a bit. To be told what to do infuriates me. To be convinced with real-life examples that are supported by book learning that something I used to believe was true is no longer true, that change in my convictions is to free my mind. It's why I'm UU. I come to this faith with biases and shoddy thinking in the belief that I will be forced to confront my biases, that I will be asked to consider my role in the dance of all life, that I will be moved to be more compassionate and more forgiving, not just to others, but to myself. To have a mind full of bias is like running on empty with a broken gas gauge. You see the gauge, and you just don't want to believe that illusory fumes may be all you have. It is not wishful thinking that will build the new Jerusalem. It is clear thinking, relentless self-examination, and lots of very hard work, supplemented by the ability to see yourself and other people as and how they are, with understanding and love, unclouded by sentimentality or expectation. I'm asking you today to make it your business to examine your biases and to help make Beacon a great place, a safe place to do that in. When we learn about cognitive bias and learn what we may do to fight it, that problem, cognitive bias, that problem of human cognition that makes our flaws invisible to us and the very same flaws in others insufferable, we are in truth working on our theology. We will find in ourselves better solutions by thinking better quality thoughts. Blessed be.